The Lord be with you.
And
And
also
also with
with
you.
you.
Let's pray. Good and gracious God, we give you thanks for this moment of our day, to nestle in to nestle into the text, and the gospel of Luke, the gospel of your son, Jesus Christ. God, we ask that you come among us now, enliven our hearts, our minds, our eyes of faith, that we might encounter you and one another anew, again here in this place. Be with us as we journey in this next hour or so, and stay with us all the days of our lives. Through Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
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 Okay, so we are in Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12. And we are about over halfway through Luke chapter 12. And this is so actually by my reckoning, I believe that we got to verse 22. Is that right? Verse 22, or
Yes.
did we make it?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Did we
Yes.
make it all the way? Does anyone remember? For some reason, I have a lot of notes all the way at 34, but that might be from a previous Bible study. Jenny, did we make it through 34 last week?
I was just trying to look and see at
I
my
don't know why. I'm
My
thinking
records
we did
show.
reading it. It just seems so familiar, unless we've got something another time on it.
I think we have. My notes said to
Yeah,
start
I
on
believe
verse
we have.
22.
Oh, your notes say 22. So I remember talking. This is why it'd be nice if I posted the video. I think we, in the last 10 minutes or so, we got through 22 through 34. So here's what I'd like to do. But we, because we didn't have a ton of time to get through 34. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to read, I'm going to read verses 22 through 34, but then I would like our next reader to just pick it up at 35, and take us all the way through. Well, you know what? I'll just read. My hope was to get to 40, but that's not very far. So you know what? I'm going to be our reader. I'm going to pick us up and bring us through verse 40. I think the first part will be familiar, but again, we kind of gave it short shrift last week. So I don't want to brush past it too quickly. Before we begin, I will say, if you feel like I'm rushing through things, it's because I always savor these moments when our two Bible studies can find one another at a fun juncture. And just such a moment would come if we only could make it. I'm not going to force it. If we only could make it to 13, 1 through 9, that happens to be our text for this Sunday. So I'm not going to push it too hard, but it's just one of these fun moments when we had a conversation about that text yesterday, and we could bring it in here as well. But we may pass each other in the night. We'll see. Anyway, so starting at 22, I'm going to be our reader all the way through 40. We'll pick up our conversation there. And there's Kathy. Hey, Kathy, we're starting with verse 22, just to reiterate what I think we completed the last at the end of last week. And I'm going all the way through verse 22 through 40 of chapter 12. Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your span of life? If then you are not able to do so small a thing as that, why do you worry about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying, for it is the nations of the world that strive after all these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, strive for his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Be dressed for action and have your lamps lit. Be like those who are waiting for their master to return from the wedding banquet so that they may open the door for him as soon as he comes and knocks. Blessed are those slaves whom the master finds alert when he comes. Truly, I tell you, he will fasten his belt and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them. If he comes during the middle of the night or near dawn and finds them, blessed are those slaves. But know this: if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. All right. Words, images, phrases. Kathy, we couldn't recall, and I had just gotten done saying, I apologize for not posting our video last week. We thought, I seem to remember reading the first part of that text last week at the very tail of our Bible study. So we thought, well, okay, we'll revisit that and take us into our next piece. But words, images, phrases, either from that newer section, everyone, or from the text as a whole that we just read aloud. Anything that grabs your attention? Go ahead,
I
Sue.
look at for the okay, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour.
What do you make of that?
We don't know when he is coming again. That's what I'm looking at because we keep, it always seems to be an issue. And I just think this kind of affirms that.
The unexpected hour of the coming. So this coming, this is a mysterious thing, right? This, some people will call it the second coming, or you have rapture imagery. In Greek, it's parousia. Another word for this coming is actually Advent. That's actually where we get the season of Advent, the coming. But again, a huge, mysterious, biblical topic we kind of stumble across in this one. Yeah, the unexpected hour. What else do we see in this, or more about that? Go ahead, Jennifer.
I guess I'm kind of thinking or wondering. What does it mean to be ready? Be ready for what? I mean, what's going to happen if we somehow know, experience that God is coming? What are we supposed to do? Oh, I didn't believe before. Now I believe. It's been a while since I've had my last confession, as the Catholics would say. I'm not really sure. And the only thing I can kind of make of it, but it doesn't really make sense. It's kind of like prepare your heart for, I don't know, the time in your life when everything changes and so that you don't think, oh, I wish I had spent more time, say, just enjoying my children. I wish I'd spent more time writing letters to my friends or visiting my grandparents. So I'm not sure. What are we supposed to do? What is the get ready all about?
Yeah. And it's just fair warning. It's about to get even worse. And so I shouldn't say worse, but we're going to hear more about this in the verses to come. I'm not sure if it's going to help or complicate things or make that. My sense is that this is going to actually get heightened even a little bit more. Yeah. So what does this mean to get ready? I'm curious. You don't have to necessarily. This doesn't have to be a question that represents your own interpretations or your own understandings. But I'm curious, when you've heard the words second coming or the coming of Jesus, what have been what are the interpretations that you've heard or explored for what that means? Anyone at all, really?
I kind of think it just means post-resurrection. I kind of think that it's an awareness that Christ is always with us now. When I say Christ will come again, like every day, yeah, that's the only one that has ever made sense to me, really. Like, and do what?
Yeah, this kind
Especially after
of
we studied Revelation, and it's not gonna be like so.
So that's one possibility. Yeah, this coming of Jesus at every moment, right? This perpetual inbreaking of the kingdom of God in our world, in our lives, here and now. Okay, that's one option. I'm going to try not to give these any kind of weight. You mentioned Revelation, Jennifer, and I'm curious, have others heard other or heard sermons on or pop culture ideas on what else this might mean, the second coming or coming of Jesus?
It sounds more precise when we say it that way than him being with us every day.
Yeah, like an event, right?
Event, something that's going to happen. It almost sounds like it's excluding the fact that he is already with us.
Yeah, especially verse 40, right?
Yeah.
An unexpected hour, right?
Yeah.
There's almost this kind of specificity, and so
Yeah.
Jennifer mentioned Revelations, right? There are some groups who believe that the second coming is a historical event that we're waiting for, a moment in history when Jesus returns. They'll call it the end of the world, apocalypse, rapture. I mean, those are all sort of kind of different things. But that would seem to be like an event on a timetable, right? Yeah.
But do you,
Go ahead, Ginny. Yeah.
I was just gonna say, but do you think that this is something only experienced by Christians?
And that's definitely one of those sort of defining characteristics of that rapture theology, especially, right? That it is something experienced or specifically for Christians. That's an interesting question, also, of the other possibility, though, this constant inbreaking of the kingdom of God, right? Christ coming at every moment. Is that something only experienced by Christians? Jenny, I don't know if you meant to ask it that both in both
It's all
cases,
right.
but
Yeah.
yeah, no, that's an interesting question and adds some shape and color, I think, to both of those. So there is a kind of dimension here of exclusivity, right? Of kind of insider knowledge, foreknowledge, right? Insider, and it's helpful to remember Jesus is talking to his disciples here, right? Chapter 12 started with a warning against the Pharisees, and we've heard parables, we've heard these things. So this is definitely a teaching moment. So this is kind of, insider information for the people who are following him. Interesting. Anything else? Kathy, I'm wondering, you've got an expression in your face that makes me think you're thinking.
Oh dear. Otherwise, but anyway, I just thought it's curious how there's this comparison or to a thief. I mean, to a criminal, to a felon. You know, be wary. Usually we have our guard up, or I don't know, but it's a lot of types of people one could liken this to, and thief.
Especially so you're 39. Is Jesus calling himself a thief? If so, I mean, is this like a Bilbo Baggins kind of thief, right? Where it's a thief in the best. I don't know if I just finished reading Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit, so I'm all with Bilbo Baggins. But Bilbo Baggins is sent on a mission to go rob the dragon Smaug of this treasure. So he's kind of a noble thief in a way. So is Jesus like a noble thief, or I'm not sure. That's a possibility. Yeah. Sort of an unsavory, identifying himself as an unsavory character in some ways.
Yeah.
Maybe this is just part of our mystery.
Part of our mystery. Oh, there it is again, that mystery. No, say
Not
more
knowing
about that soon.
exactly when to expect him, how to expect him, the unknown. Definite, finite answer.
Okay, I give you a hard time about mystery because it
I
comes
know you
up,
do.
but that's a love language. But I think you're onto something there, though, which is, I think the key word is unexpected, right? And that kind of dovetails. Cheryl, say more about that. I just heard your voice. Go ahead.
Oh, Bruce's little study notes are talking about that, it being unexpected. And you don't expect a thief either. What we're
No.
hang on, what's that? The return is not secret, so every eye will see him. And so it's referring to Revelations 1:7, but they're saying it's unexpected. But it does say every eye will see him. It's the time that's unexpected.
Interesting. So in that way, that would kind of be more of a to that particular hour, right? This unexpected hour, talking about almost a historical moment. I could almost see, I'm kind of switching back and forth between this inbreaking at every moment and then this specific time. I could actually see that unexpected going in both ways, in both cases, in both Christ inbreaking at unexpected moments, say, of hopelessness. Kathy, you're unmuted and you were just muted, so I wonder if you had, go ahead.
What's interesting too, I was thinking, in terms of control, that we won't have control. It's unexpected. It's like, and likewise, I think there's this lack of feeling of control if one were a thief were to approach us. That would be the first kind of response is something's out of control, at least for a while. But so then it made me think too, some fundamentalists think, that hastening this so-called second coming, is up to them, right? So they want to reestablish where the capital is for Israel or whatever the agenda is. But yeah, it's out of our control. It's God's time, not our time. So those were some of my thoughts.
So to the I'll kind of speak a little bit historically here and commend a book to anybody who hasn't had the chance to read it, if I can find it on my bookshelf. Ah, here it is. The Rapture Exposed by Barbara Rossing. We read this when we covered the Book of Revelation. Barb is a friend. She even came and talked to this Bible study group one afternoon. That was a lot of fun to have her. Excellent book. This was written in the aftermath of the invasion of Iraq. So that's very much on her mind, Kathy, right? When she talks about Christian, the influence of this theology of and it has a name. The theology is called dispensationalism. This influence of this particularly American and English theology that emerges in like the 18th century. And a sort of a historical phenomenon, but seeks to set the circumstances for the coming of Jesus, right? Through political action in the here and now, right? So, yeah, set in the capital of Israel, set, resetting the boundaries of the nation of Israel. This and Barbara Rossing is a Lutheran theologian. She's very much against this reading of Revelation. She is outrightly hostile to it. I think for a lot of important reasons and reasons that I just cards on the table, I'm very sympathetic to. And so I appreciate her. Instead, she talks about Revelation as a message of hope. And I think that it's possible to read some hope into this here too. Kathy, you just talked about being on the guard and or having this inbreaking like a thief in the night, and it does occur to me, and this is going to intersect with our Bible study just yesterday, where we know what it is, we know what it means to have people in this world who feel maybe by their own choices or not, usually not, feel beyond hope, right? Feel like they are either existentially and emotionally or intellectually or physically captive and beyond possibility for hope and liberation, right? And so we could read this in a personal sense and say, I've had some moments where I thought I was on my guard, and that was actually the very moment where the power, the kingdom broke through. Or we could also read this as just when we're in those places that feel hopeless, God can break in even there, like a thief finding a crack in a door or a window that we thought we had, or that somebody thought. So there is maybe a message of hope there all the same, right? Whether we're guarded or being guarded. Pam, I see you're logging in. I hope you can hear us and see us. Welcome. We're in chapter 12, between verses 22 and 40. So just in case you're there to hear us. I'd like to keep reading because all of this material sort of flows together. But before we move on to this next piece, I found it really helpful as I was researching this afternoon and yesterday about this next piece, because I struggle exactly with these issues that we're talking about. But one of my commentators made mention of this next piece as a writing about stewardship. Now, y'all probably heard stewardship in your church speak. Alarms go off. You think, oh no, pastor's about to talk about money and we're about to get hit up for a stewardship drive and make a pledge. Relax, that's not what I'm saying. But there is a sense in the ancient world, both in the ancient world and today we can use this language, of a steward of a house. Being one who looks after the house while the lord of the house or the master of the house or the owner of a house is away. So the steward is the one who is the caretaker, has the authority of a caretaker, while the owner is off in the distance. So I want to give you that frame as we encounter this next piece, because I think it's really helpful to imagine this as being spoken about our work in the world as stewards of God's house. Okay? I usually don't do that. I like to come clean to these things, but I want to give you that frame before we proceed. So, who would like to read verses 41 through 41 through 48? Who'd like to read 41 through 48? Hey, Pam, we're in chapter 12, 41 through 48. Welcome. Yep. Okay, Cheryl, thanks so much.
Peter asked, "Lord, are you telling this parable to us or to everyone?" The Lord answered, "Who then is the faithful and wise manager, whom the manager puts in charge of his servants to give them their food allowance at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whom the master finds doing so when he returns. Truly, I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose the servant says to himself, 'My master is taking a long time in coming,' and he then begins to beat the other servants, both men and women, and to eat and drink and get drunk. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. The servant who knows the master's will and does not get ready or does not do what the master wants will be beaten with many blows. But the one who does not know and does things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked."
Thanks, Cheryl. So words, images, phrases, whether or not the frame that I gave the group is to approach is helpful or not, what strikes you in this bit of text?
Kind of un-Jesus-like, being punished, and it's tough to think about that. I don't generally think about God and Jesus in terms of, this is what's going to happen if you don't do what I say.
This is troubling stuff. Jenny, I'm looking at verses. I take you to mean I don't know, half the reading, 46 through 40, 46 and 47 especially. My translation, Cheryl, yours was great too. The master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, in an hour he does not know, and cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. What? That slave who knew what his master wanted but did not prepare him, or did he will receive a severe beating. What is Jesus talking about? Jennifer, I am with you. This sounds violent, and I'm deeply uncomfortable with this. What is Jesus talking about here? And is this a case of do we leave this part behind? How do we deal with this? And it's okay if you struggle with it as I do. I'm trying to make some space for that. So there is, I'll give us one of my commentators, Justo Gonzalez, puts this in. He says there are parables about the nearness of God, And there's parables about the nearness of God and the absence of God. And then there's also parables about loss, things that are lost, right? So we have the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, right? And then we have this saying that would seem to be about the absence of God, the loss of God, right? God missing from creation, right? Of being in a world subject to persons of authority who do nasty things while God is not home. That's one of the things that Justo Gonzalez points to. I'm not sure if that helps or hurts us or to what degree it helps. But anyway, I offer that as a possibility here, that this is about the experience of the absence of God. Elie Wiesel, who's a Jewish writer of the 20th century, has a book called Night, right? It's the experience of his experience in Auschwitz. And he in that book, he wrestles as a Jewish man with the silence of God in the face of human atrocity. Argument to be made that he doesn't entirely lose his faith necessarily, but that the experience of Auschwitz for him is an experience of the absence of God and a wrestling with what that absence means for human experience, how it changes his perception of who God is. Well, hands going up. I love it. Cheryl and then Sue and then Jennifer. Cheryl, go ahead.
I kind of like my footnote in my Bible because it talks about the servant becoming lax in his watching, and he allowed the influence of the world to sway him away from his responsibilities. And then it said the parable would have special meaning for believers in the early church, readers who expected the imminent return of Jesus in their own lifetime and were in danger of growing weary in their expectations. So it kind of took away the violence of that and put it in a different perspective for me when I read that.
Thanks. Thanks, Cheryl. Go ahead, Sue. Oh, Sue, you're muted. Unmute.
Unmute. There we go. I was just thinking sometimes when you have a child, the one that gets in trouble is one that knew better. Most of the time,
Same.
you're in more trouble if you knew better and you still did it compared to one that accidentally did it or did it really un I don't know what the right word would be, but unprovoked or whatever. But the child that knew better usually does end up in more trouble with the parent than the one that didn't.
So is there I think I know where you're going with that. Say more. Say more. How does that
Because I'm just looking here, you know, when it talks about when he, okay, where, the master that played will come down to that, but the one who did not know did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating compared to the heavier beating because he did know better.
Yeah. So
And I was just putting it into everyday perspective.
in that way, if I hear you, I mean, that kind of reminds me about like the legal difference between murder and manslaughter, right? Murder
Yeah.
one, murder two, murder, right? And manslaughter, right? There's an ethical difference between
Intent.
intent, right? A legal difference. In
Mm-hmm.
that way, it almost seems like we were just talking about how this is teaching for Jesus's disciples, right? This is a teaching about what it means to have this knowledge of the kingdom of God or have faith. In that case, I hear what you're saying is saying, hey folks, we're playing with fire here. There is this kingdom is a thing of substance, right? You know what it is to be people who know that God craves justice in the world. So don't move through the world doing injustice. You can't hide behind manslaughter if you know that you, well, I'm mixing metaphors here, but you get what I'm saying. You know the law of God, follow it now. You know the desires of God, you're not ignorant of those. So it's kind of a warning to disciples, if I hear you right. That's helpful. That helps me a lot, actually. Jennifer, I know, go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I was just kind of playing with the thought of maybe that master is not God, but maybe it is our own ego. So you've heard the good news, these disciples of Jesus. You've heard what it means to love your neighbor. And if you think that God, let's say Jesus isn't here anymore, but Jesus is going to come again, and God will be present with us again. But so, we know what it's like. I'll just speak for myself. I know what it's like to, let's say, just like overindulge. Okay, I haven't overindulged before, and I can, it's not pleasant the next day. And so if we know something is the wrong thing to do or is going to have consequences, we shouldn't think that, oh, no one's really going to find out, because God does see all. And sometimes, I mean, that's a personal example of something I've done, to myself, and whether it's like a headache or, okay, there were some things I was going to do the next day and I didn't ended up not doing them. I might quote unquote beat myself up about it. And if I did something like I broke a promise to someone or didn't honor a commitment I had made because I had too many glasses of wine the night before, that's going to be even worse because I knew better, and I've been given stewardship to say, go visit somebody in the hospital that I didn't see, or anything, And so maybe that master is our own self, who is going to just shred us up and condemn us. I mean, Jesus has talked about before how people who don't forgive will be, they'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And yeah, that's what happens when we carry around these burdens of hate or of anger. Rather than give them to God, rather than steward them through and with God's help. And I mean, let's say that you were driving down the street and you saw some, like a little child by the side of the road, and you're like, oh, I'm really in a hurry. I can't stop. And then you find out that child was hit by a car, or was lost for a day without their parents. If you were to find out the consequences of the actions when you drop the ball, then that would be a pretty, that's a pretty terrible punishment, I think. So especially with those of us who call ourselves Christians. And so I'm just kind of thinking about that as a possibility to make sense of this passage.
I appreciate that. That is that's the kind of I appreciate that because it's a way of turning the text on its head, right? And seeing kind of mixing up the characters from what we immediately assume is the assigned meaning allegorically to this text and saying, oh, we know this experience. We know this ex it's called it has a name. It's called shame, right? And then maybe the next question, and I kind of hear you going here, Jenny, is to say, what's Jesus's relationship to shame usually? Ah, okay, Jesus is not the one who intends shame, but Jesus is the one who what drives that darkness away, right? Jesus is interested in the opposite of that for us, right? The abundance of life. Interesting. I appreciate that reading very much. Thanks, Jenny. Thanks for taking the time for that. This is hard. I've so these are difficult texts because they so easily would paint this is maybe to your point, Jennifer, would easily incline us toward an interpretation of Jesus, or we might say God, as punishing, as interested in this sort of retributive justice, right? Eye for an eye. You did wrong, you get punished. You did wrong, you get punished. And so I'm always fascinated and grateful for readings that help us sort of slough that off, right? How do we, and not for just wishful thinking sake, but to get beyond our sort of normal intent or normal way of thinking through these. It doesn't get any better, so let's just get this next piece out of the way. Well, I don't know. Maybe it does get better. I'm just kidding. But I would like to actually finish this chapter out while we have time. So I'm looking for two readers, actually. One to take verses 49 through 53. 49 through 53. And then Ginny, you want to do that? Okay. And then after Ginny, so pick it up at 54. Follow it down through the end of chapter 12, so 54 through 59. Who would like to take that piece? Okay, Jennifer. So we got Jenny and then Jennifer.
I have come to bring fire on the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. But I have a baptism to undergo, and what constraint I am under until it is completed. Do you think I came to bring peace on earth? No, I tell you, but division. From now on, there will be five in one family divided against each other, three against two, and two against three. They will be divided, father against son, and son against father, mother against daughter, and daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law.
Then he said to the crowds, "When you see a cloud rising in the west, you say at once that it is going to rain, and so it does. And when you feel the south wind blowing, you say that it is going to be hot, and so it is. You frauds! You know how to interpret the look of the earth and sky. Why can't you interpret the meaning of the times in which you live? And why can't you decide for yourselves what is right? For instance, when you're going before the magistrate with your opponent, do your best to come to terms with him while you have the chance, or he may rush you off to the judge, and then the judge hand you over to the police officer, and the police officer throw you into prison. I tell you, you will never get out again until you have paid your last farthing."
Thank you both. Beautiful. Well, beautiful reading, not so beautiful words. So Jesus saying, "I have not come to bring peace, but division." Well, strike our words of peace from the liturgy right now. What do we do? What do we make of this stuff? What tools do we have? So, words, images, phrases that strike you as challenging or as good news, bad news. Who would like to start us off?
Well, peace is just letting the corrupt in power just do what they please. That's peaceful. To them, peace, or peace is not challenging someone when they say something that's, say, racist. It's peaceful, but that's not what Jesus came to bring, So that's how I interpret it, that peace is standing up for what's right, what's kind, what's Jesus's way, which is often, ultimately peaceful, but often not between family members or friends or whatnot. I mean, that's
So
what I think.
So this is so in some ways we should read this before Thanksgiving. This should be our Thanksgiving Eve service right here. No, right. That's become a theme. I've noticed that in the last, oh, 10 years before, it probably goes way back, right? This anxiety, this heightened anxiety of the family dinner table around the holidays, so much so that it's been parodied in SNL sketches and TV. And I'm sure it goes back further than just the last 10 years. But we know this. So Jenny, if I hear you right, what you're saying is there is no peace. In fact, the peace that we experience is a false peace when injustice continues in the world. Is that what I hear you saying? Yeah. And so Jesus is saying, no, I'll be that obnoxious relative at the dinner table that says, excuse me, fill in the blank. Others, others. Kathy, go
Prior to
ahead. Yeah.
that, yeah, he talks about I have a baptism and to receive, how distressed I am and until it's over. I'm like, what? So people who are don't have the luxury of being baptized, of which there are many in the world, they should be. I don't know what to make of that one either.
I had that's verse 50. I have a baptism with which to be baptized, and what stress I am under until it is completed. Yeah. So Kathy, what I heard you wrestling with was, wait a second, is this an indictment of the unbaptized? Is that what I heard you? Like non-Christians?
I don't really want to put it at their feet.
Yeah.
There are just many people where it's just not a thing.
Yeah.
So then what? It's and I've asked this before, I think, but I'm still confused. I know John the Baptist was baptizing. Was that a common practice in all of that part of the ancient world where people were being baptized all the time, or was this just kind of his hang up? I mean, if he's so distressed over it, sounds like, I don't know.
So the term baptism is not unified whatsoever in the ancient world. It actually has a connotation of like ritual purity, like ritual washings, right? It has a connotation, actually one kind of obscure connotation is that of a sword like piercing flesh. It's a strange, it's one of the ways that it has use in the ancient world of sort of life ending, actually. Interesting that that should make its way into some of our baptismal imagery, right? We say like we drown sin and today, right? The sin is drowned, the resurrection. So anyway, we have this sort of life and death imagery in our baptism today. In this context, what I it can also mean like mission or call, the baptism with which I'm baptized, the cup I drink, the mission I'm on, the thing that I'm doing. So oftentimes this will be interpreted not as the sort of induction of those who are baptized versus those who are not, like as a induction into a society, maybe membership. But in this way, I think it's almost more like oftentimes theologians will look at this and say, Jesus here is talking about his mission to go to the cross, right? So one of the readings that I think is challenging, but also kind of contextually fits is Jesus saying, I have a baptism with which to be baptized. He's saying, I have a mission to complete here. And And to the rest of the world, it's actually going to look like a thief coming in the night, right? It's going to lead me to the place where I'll be actually among the rest of the thieves hanging on a cross. And I am just frustrated as I'll get up until I'm done with this thing. Y'all are annoying me. No, that's not what he's saying. Sue, I see your hand, but Cheryl first. Go ahead, Cheryl. You've been patient with me.
Well, you kind of hit on what I was going to say because my footnote talked about that. It referred, they said that Jesus referred to his baptism as the crucifixion in the Jerusalem, in which he would be wholly immersed in the suffering of the cross. But it says his death, however, would be a fulfillment of prophecy, the supreme act of reconciliation of men and women with God. So I thought that was a nice little
Yeah,
footnote.
that is a nice footnote. So, thanks, Cheryl. Sue, go ahead.
There we go. Okay, this just brought back up to me with the question in like 51. Do you think that I have come to bring peace to the earth? Made me think of John 3:17, where basically God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world, but nor the world might be saved through him. Another place just saying the intent why Christ is here on earth. That just brought that to my mind.
You know, you're so, I think you're in the same ballpark as kind of what I heard, in a way, what I heard Jenny say too, and I'll kind of unify the two comments a little. Justo Gonzalez says, when he says, I came to bring fire to the earth, what if we thought about this as the refiner's fire? Right? The kind of fire that is needed to bring up, I mean, the refiner's fire, right? So that's an imagery of gold and metalworking. A refiner's fire helps purify that which is beautiful, right? And so again, coming back to this image of stewards of the promises of God, stewards of God's justice, you know, that we just encountered in this faithful and unfaithful servant piece. What if Jesus is saying, oh, people, y'all know what God desires of you, and it is not going to be an easy task. And that's not because God has made it a difficult task and you're being put to the test, but because the let's see, one theologian always talks, Ched Myers, a theologian that I like and appreciate, always talks about God's dream of justice, right? God's dream of justice is this beautiful vision of the kingdom of heaven where people are clothed and fed and given what they need to lead good lives here. And yet we as human beings, those of us, everyone in this room included, who has worked for justice in the world, knows what an uphill battle that is, right? God's dream of justice is something worth striving for, and is incredibly difficult, right? For numerous reasons, but not impossible. It wouldn't be God's vision if it was impossible. So this refiner's fire, yeah, Jennifer, you mentioned these. It takes the courage. It takes the inner strength. It takes the inner work of knowing God's call to be peacemakers, real peacemakers in the world, real advocates of justice in the world. It takes having those awkward conversations around the dinner table, even maybe. Well, friends, we're here at time. I hope we've kind of at a minimum given ourselves some things to wrestle with. Thank you for your willingness to wrestle through these texts. Again, I find these very difficult. Some of these we come across on Sunday mornings, and some of them we don't. And speaking of fire, you know, we're playing with fire. When we encounter texts like this, it's really easy to burn ourselves, I think. And you know, hearing Jesus talk about beating servants and slaves. It's deeply uncomfortable, but I just want to say thank you for your willingness to kind of play with this fire safely and gently with one another, in a place where that's loving work, and we can hear one another in love and in hope and in the graciousness of this place. So thank you. Thanks for doing this together. Are there prayers as we go into the night, as we go into the afternoon, evening? Oh, here, I will say, announcement time. This afternoon, this evening, we have dinner at 6 p.m. and worship at 7 p.m. Our worship here at Shepherd of the Valley tonight will be a simple gathering around song and prayer. And then Antoine, our youth director, Antoine, will be guiding us through the contemplative prayer practice of Lectio Divina, sometimes called Lexio. You may have heard Lectio or Lexio, both are fine. Divina. So come join in. It'll be a really rich time. Okay, so speaking of prayer, what prayers are do we have to lift up this night? I'm going to turn the recording off. Bye to our friends who are with us on a recording.